ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Soul will be vanquished, and he will become a most exalted devotee of the Lord. If one who hears of the gopis' lusty behavior with Krishna becomes free from lusty desires, certainly the gopis who approached Krishna became free from all such desires. Similarly, Shishupal and others who were very much envious of Krishna and who constantly thought of Krishna became free from envy. Narada Muni, Nanda Maharaj, rather, and Mother Yashoda were fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness because of affection. When the mind is somehow or other fully absorbed in Krishna, the material part is very soon vanquished, and the spiritual part, attraction to Krishna, becomes manifest. This indirectly confirms that if one thinks of Krishna enviously, simply because of thinking of Krishna, he becomes free from all sinful reactions and thus becomes a pure devotee. Examples of this are given in the following verse. This is an important verse, and it's coming in the conversation that starts after Parikshit Maharaj inquires from Shukadeva Goswami about whether or not the Supreme Lord is actually impartial, because in the previous canto, as you all know, the Lord helped Indra and his followers to defeat Vritrasura. And therefore it seems as if Krishna is favorable to the demigods. And this would be a contradiction. In fact, Kamsa is claiming this. He says that actually, aha, just see, everyone says that the Lord is equal, but he helped the demigods. He helped Indra. And he's obviously not impartial. So Parikshit wants to know, he wants to clarify this point at the beginning of the seventh canto of is he actually partial? And this conversation is important, as I said, because it goes to whether or not Krishna is the perfect moral agent. Oftentimes, people who are suffering in this world default to the idea that actually I'm being singled out and punished unnecessarily, because after all, what did I ever do to anybody? And also, it may seem random because of my lack of perspective, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita in the 15th chapter, Narupam asyeha tato palabhyate nanto na cha adhirnacha sampratishta ashvatamenam suvaruda mulam asanga shastrena dritena chitva, that it's very difficult to understand our position in this world. We don't know where it begins or where it ends, and where we're actually standing. We can't get that perspective. We're too small. Therefore, it seems inordinate, the types of situations that we find ourselves in. We have no idea. And of course, there's the perennial question of theodicy, or the subject of theodicy, through which any religious system has to prove that God is not cruel. How is it that there's a material world, there's birth, death, suffering, and so forth, at the same time God is all good? How does he kill kittens and children and all kinds of other living entities? And of course we have an elaborate philosophy which is presented by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu especially through the pen of Jiva Goswami in the Sandarbha teachings, in which he describes the ways in which Krishna is manifesting various energies, and the living entities get involved in these energies because of their nature of being tatastha and having free will. And that the material energy, of course, is stimulated by the time factor, which comes through the glance of the Lord when he looks over the material nature. And the laws of karma and the ways of combinations and permutations of three modes of material nature take place after that stimulation. But still, the Lord is not directly involved in that process. So, my point here is that oftentimes, from a material perspective, while I'm still identified with the material body and mind and suffering, which is natural because of misidentifying myself, something I'm not, then I'll have this question, you know, why am I suffering and is God impartial? So that's why it's important, and it comes up at the beginning of this chapter. So then, Shukadeva Goswami explains to Parikshit Maharaj that actually every living entity has a particular capacity to absorb the Lord's mercy. In a purport in the Adi Lila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada describes how in every species of life, the living entity has a particular appreciating capacity. In the lower species of life, for instance, protozoan, who multiply in the ocean and are consumed by other kinds of higher living entities, the only consciousness is of annamoy, or an awareness that there's food, which is actually a connection to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because all food comes from the sun comes from Krishna. And this is the relationship. As one progresses through various species of life, especially when one comes to the human form of life, which is described as very rare and valuable, yam labvam sudulabham idam bahusambhavante manusha martidam anityam. Pihadira. It's temporary like all the other bodies, but in the human form of life, one has the opportunity to inquire about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and to attain the supreme interest in life, which is to reconnect with Krishna. In that form, one has the ability to expand one's appreciating capacity practically unlimitedly for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's what the process of devotional service is meant to do. However, according to one's interaction with the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, and the way in which one's conditioned by those modes, one will suffer and enjoy. And Krishna gives this as a very simple equation in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 13th chapter, 22nd verse, where he says, Purusha prakriti stohi bhute prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangosya sarasad yoni janmasu. If you want to know the cause of your suffering or enjoyment in this world, the good and bad, the sat, asat bodies that you get, various lifetimes, it's due to your association with the three modes of material nature. And so this is the argument that Shukadeva Goswami gives in the beginning of the seventh canto, and that is that demons tend to associate with the mode of ignorance. And because of that, they are not able to absorb the complete mercy of the Lord, because the mode of ignorance tends to drag one down. That's what it does. And the demigods, because of their association with the mode of goodness, can take in more mercy from the Lord. Yesham tantakatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvanva mohanir mukta bhajantimam dridavrita. Krishna confirms in the Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter, that when one is in higher modes of material nature, acting piously, then one can receive more mercy from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yesham tuntagatam papam. One's becoming free from sinful activities. And that such people can be steadily situated in devotional service, which means accepting the mercy of the Lord. And therefore, Shukadeva Goswami confirms that it's not the Lord's impartiality that is determining who wins and who loses in the material world, especially in the conflicts between the demigods and the demons. Rather, it's their juxtaposition with the three modes of material nature, through which they align themselves with various destinies because of the fact that they've associated in that way. And that solves that problem. And of course, it's important to note that any self-respecting self-help guru anywhere will tell you the same thing, and it's not what happens to you in this world that matters, it's what you do about what happens to you that matters. And we say the same thing because we're the ultimate source of self-help coming from Krishna. And that is to understand that you're not helpless. You're not helplessly being tossed in the three modes of material nature, although at some point you may be. When you come to knowledge, you can do something about it. And one should therefore not claim to be permanently unqualified. That's illegal. And Vyasadeva points this out in the Vedanta Sutra when he says very logically that, listen, who are all the Shastras speaking to anyway? If they're speaking, they're speaking to you, obviously, the living entity. It's not speaking to God or to the wall. And therefore, if it's saying there's a state of perfection which one can attain, that means you can attain it. Otherwise, the Shastra statements would be illogical. And therefore, Srila Vyasadeva concludes, you are agents, you as a soul, as an agent for change, who can actually improve him or herself and rise to the highest position of perfection in devotional service and in life in general. So now in today's verse, we have this very powerful statement, which is very optimistic and helpful, also hopeful, that describes the power of meditating on Krishna. This is Krishna's main instruction, arguably, in the Bhagavad Gita, and that is man mana bhava mad bhakto, think of me, and fix your mind upon me. In the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, maya sakta manaparta yogam yunjan marashraya asamshayam shamagramam yatagyasasi tashrinu. Krishna says, listen very carefully to me, Arjuna, how by practicing yoga, you can make your mind completely attached to me. And here, we get some insight into how that's possible. Because what's being pointed out here is that even the demons who are in the lower modes of material nature, who hate Krishna, actually, or envious of him, because they think of him with that intensity and somehow or other they fix their minds on him, even though it's not devotional service, because it's not favorable. It's not done in a mood of service favorable to Krishna. Therefore, it's not considered a devotional service. Nonetheless, because they're thinking of Krishna, they become purified to the point where they can take to devotional service because they've come in contact with Krishna. And then the argument is made here by Prabhupada gives this verse, which was presented by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary, Vikriditam Vrajavadurvira Idam Cha Vishnu Shadhan Vito Nishinu Yadadavarna Yadya Bhaktim Praram Bhagavati Pratilabhyakam Amrit Rogam Ashvapahino Yacharena Tira, which says that if one meditates on the playful pastimes of Krishna with the gopis in Vrindavan, then Bhaktim Param Bhagavate Pratilabhya Kamam, one will be able to develop Bhaktim Param, the highest level of devotional service. Of course, it says Shradhan Vito. One has to have the proper context and orientation and understanding it, the proper faith. If one hears these things with faith, then one will very quickly come to that position. So, the implication is, if demons through thinking of Krishna and with a sense of hate or envy can become perfect. What to speak of those who have were culturing faith properly and are leaning into the process of thinking of Krishna? Even in, from the stage of Vaidhi Bhakti, before one has taste, this process is called Ajata Ruchi Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti, because we're following the process given in the Srimad Bhagavatam and by the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. It's actually a kind of Raganuga, following in the footsteps of the devotees in Vrindavan, even though we don't have taste for it. Even I don't, I should say, you do, have taste for such a process. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati comments in a parallel verse, which is in the Srimad Bhagavatam, parallel to today's verse. What is it? Yet Krama Krodha Sahaja Pranayadi Piti Vatsalya Moha Guru Gaurava Sevya Bhava Sanchintya Tasya Sadrishim Tanuma Purete Govindamari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. This is almost exactly the same verse, where Brahma in his Samhita is saying, Kama, with lust, Krodha, with anger, Sahaja, natural friendly love, Bhiti, out of fear, if one thinks of Krishna, somehow or other comes in contact with Krishna, then one can come to the perfectional stage of life. So, Krishna is special. And in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, Srila Rupa Goswami points this out, the various avatars of Krishna, but if you think of Krishna and you associate with Krishna, hear about Krishna and so forth, then there's special mercy, special benediction, and one will come to the perfect stage of life. So the admonition is, somehow or other, one should fix one's mind on Krishna. And in the stage of practicing, in the stage of sadhana, this is especially done by keeping oneself in contact with those items that are stimuli for the love for Krishna. This is what we actually do in our kind of Vaidhi Bhakti. We're associating ourselves with Krishna in various ways. For instance, we go to see the Artik ceremony, and there's Krishna being worshipped, and the lamp. Actually, the most stunning Artik I ever saw was in Toronto when we were living in the temple and there was an ice storm and all the electricity went out for 4 days. And then I actually realized what lamps are for. Actually, to light the deities. Because otherwise, you know, you can't see anything, especially in Mangal Artik, when there's no electricity. But when the Pujari would put the lamp in front of the deities, and you'd see why they do circles on each part of the Lord's body. It's like, oh yeah, there's his lotus feet. But everything would sparkle. And it's so charming. And it is a very touching experience, actually. One could easily take it for granted and think, you know, I'd rather be at the mall or something like that. But actually, if one, by contact with Krishna and the very beautiful aspects of devotional service, worshipping Tulsi Devi, making this esoteric prayer, please give me the adhikari for being in Vrindavan and being a maidservant of Krishna and so forth. All of these are ajata ruchi raganuga sanana bhakti. The only thing missing is a little taste. And in his purport to the verse, yam krodha kama sahaja pranayadi piti vatsalya moha guru gaurava sevya bhava, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta comments that the taste will come if you stay favorably engaged and in somehow or other in contact with Krishna. Then, and he said, actually he comments there in one short sentence, he said, but it takes a long time. Don't be, pushy about this. I mean, ultimately, we want to be pushy because you're supposed to develop some kind of greed to have it. But don't become impatient. Be very patient in the process and determined. And Krishna, these verses are meant to give us great hope and optimism that if I stay in contact with Krishna, even if I'm a demon, or even let's say I have demoniac propensities left over from somewhere, these will all be purified by coming in contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So stay in the name of Krishna especially, because the name is glorified in the same way, because there's no difference between the name and Krishna. The Namashrikam by Rupa Goswami, in the Namashrikam by Rupa Goswami, he mentions how even somebody who's blind to the truth of devotional service has no idea, just walking down the street minding his own beeswax, and he runs into the devotees chanting and he sees tilak all over the place, and someone hands him a cookie, and he goes away going Hare Krishna. That this person can be awakened to the sense of bhakti just by hearing the holy name. What to speak of somebody who spends time focusing their mind, refocusing their mind on the holy name, which Krishna confirms in the Bhagavad Gita that such meditation is not easy. It's like taming a wild horse. But is it worth it? Yes, nothing else is worth anything. But this is what's the goal of life, and this is worth doing. So now we could take some reflections or questions to help expand the topic. Yes, Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
My question is, in the beginning you spoke about those who are less receptive to the mercy of the Lord.
In the beginning we talked about those who are less receptive to the mercy of the Lord.
Due to association with the mode of ignorance.
Due to association with the mode of ignorance.
And then just now you said that, but if we keep in contact with Krishna, we can get purified.
And just now I said, but if we keep in contact with Krishna, we can become purified.
So if one is naturally more inclined towards the mode of ignorance, how can he approach devotional service?
So if one is naturally inclined towards the mode of ignorance, how can he approach devotional service? Well, that's what's the topic here. You know, those who are inclined to hate Krishna or be envious of Krishna, at least they're thinking of Krishna. Because there's also an exception to this. It doesn't mean just if you're angry, hateful person in the mode of ignorance, you're going to make advancement. It has to be in relationship to Krishna. Because Vena is mentioned in this chapter. Vena was an atheist. He didn't believe in Krishna. He didn't think of Krishna. He just somehow or other turned his back on the whole affair and said, I'm God. And so Shukadev goes out of his way to say, you know, all these other people got liberation, but not Vena, because Vena didn't think of Krishna. So the point is to connect with Krishna. So anyone who comes to Krishna in any mode of nature, if he or she is able to stay connected somehow. I mean, in the realm of, let's say, ISKCON, people come and they're obviously, if you do a little survey, affected by various modes of material nature. And it hardly matters because anyone can be engaged in Lord Chaitanya's movement in a particular way and stay in contact with devotional service and gradually become purified by performing devotional service. And as you know, being a preacher, when you meet people from various walks of life who are in various modes of material nature, you have to do your best to somehow or other engage them in Krishna's service and help them to think of Krishna. I mean, you know, I can't read a book, sorry, not interested in the chanting, how about a cookie? that's something. And that was what Rupa Goswami said. He said, first of all, get people to think of Krishna. That's the first rule. In fact, that's the main rule. There are only two rules. that count. One is always think of Krishna, and the other one is never forget Krishna, because he says the other rules and regulations, prohibitions, are all kinkara to these two. They're all servants. And there's millions of other rules and regulations. So you could follow all these other rules and regulations like Jarasandha did, but not think of Krishna, and then you're not doing yourself much good. The point is that somehow or other one should remember Krishna. I hope that helps. Okay. Yes, Prabhu?
Hi, Krishna. In the beginning of class, you mentioned this idea of God's partiality.
In the beginning of class, we mentioned the idea of God's partiality.
Or impartiality.
Impartiality.
And as practicing sadhakas, there's always sometimes a tension.
As practicing sadhakas, there's always a kind of tension.
Because on one hand, we should just want to offer ourselves to Krishna and not expect anything in return.
As on one hand, we just want to offer ourselves to Krishna and not expect anything in return.
But it's just natural, even in human dealings, when you're trying to have a relationship with someone, that you don't want to impose yourself on someone else.
But it's natural, even in human dealings, when you're in a relationship with someone, you don't want to impose yourself upon someone.
So either you're interested in having a relationship with someone, or they want to have a relationship with you.
So either you're interested in having a relationship with someone, or they're interested in having a relationship with you.
And of course, ontologically, we have an eternal relationship with Krishna. It's always there.
Of course, ontologically, we have an eternal relationship with Krishna. It's always there.
Sorry. But, so my question is, in the heart of heart, how do we gain the conviction that actually Krishna also wants to have a relationship with me?
So in the heart of hearts, how do we gain the conviction that Krishna actually wants to have a relationship with me?
But not become too demanding.
And create such tension. Actually, it's funny you mention that, because I was just writing about it yesterday. And, you know, Gajendra, when he's offering his prayers to the Lord, says that, "My Lord, you're never lazy in our relationship. And you never neglect us, living entities." He uses the word alas. In Bengali, it's alasya. I think it's alasya in his prayer, which means that he says you're not lazy. Actually, even before I offered my prayers, Gajendra said, you were there for me and always attentive to me, always ready to deliver me and to give me unlimited mercy. Just a matter of I was facing in the wrong direction. And therefore, the Lord is never inattentive. Prabhupada mentions this in 1.2.17, Srinivatam Swakata Krishna, Punya Shravana Kirtana, Hridyantakstohi Bhadrani Vidhunoti Suritsutam, that when one begins to hear and chant, then Krishna helps from within the heart. As he's waiting to see when will that living entity actually take some initiative. Because as I mentioned earlier, we are agents. We have our own volition. And when we do, then he helps us, like anything, from within, because he's already eager to help us. And Prabhupada mentions in his purport to 1.2.17, Srimatam Swakata Krishna, that Krishna is more eager for us to come back to Godhead than we are. He said, practically, he goes on to say, practically no man in this world actually wants to go back to God. And certainly not as much as Krishna wants to come back. You'll find this in a very, very sweet and graphic way in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, when Gopa Kumar goes into the Vaikuntha world and he meets Narayan, which is charming in and of itself, because Gopa Kumar is really not suited for Vaikuntha, and that's much to the point, because he goes in there and he's still got his Gopa Vesh on. And Lord Narayan recognizes that he's this, you know, devotee from Vrindavan, and he can't keep his four arms together either. He keeps coming into a Madan Gopal form, which is the object of Gopa Kumar's affection. And then when Lord Narayan speaks to Gopa Kumar, he says, "So what took you so long? I've been waiting for you." Life after life, and every life, he said, I thought, now certainly this life he's going to turn his attention to me, and then you didn't do it. He said, I had to cheat. He said, I never do this, but I cheated. I intervened in your life. I made you take birth in Govardhan. And then that guru you took, that was me. I came there. I asserted myself because I wanted you to come back. So one of the very striking points of the bhakti literatures is this idea that Krishna is always there, eager for relationship. It's not that he's indifferent to us. In the material world, ye yata mam prapadyante tamsta taiva bhajamyaham, he says that tit for tat, as you surrender to me, I reward you accordingly. However, you'll find a very interesting point that comes up in the verse, samoham sarvabhuteshu name dveshostinapriya. What is the next line? Ye bhajanti tu mam bhakta mai te teshu chapyaham. So this verse, it's a little bit of a head spinner. Because first Krishna says, I'm equal to everyone. And, you know, of course in the Gita it says, ye yata mam prapadyante, whatever you, I just respond. But on the second half of the verse, mai te teshu chapyaham, ye bhajanti, but if you approach me, then, actually he said, you're in me, I'm in you. But what this actually means is, the first half of the verse is about the Paramatma in the material world. Because in the material world, everyone's kind of going about their business, even if Krishna comes and says, you want to go back to Godhead? It's like, nah, not right now. I'm really busy, you know. I got to make money. And so, you know, he's like, all right, whatever. You know, just whatever you want, I'll supply. In fact, he's always facilitating. In the material world, Bhagavatam says, asau gunamayer bhavir bhuta sukshmendriyatma bi sad nirmiteshu nirvishto bhunte bhuteshu tad gunan. That when the living entity goes into Mahavishnu after trillions of years and comes back out again, you know, when the Mahavishnu exhales and is remanifested in the world, then the Lord comes, enters the heart of the jiva and says, here's what you wanted last time, and I'm ready to facilitate you, whatever you want. He goes on like that. This means that the Lord's giving unlimited facility for free will, and he doesn't assert himself because he wants that the living entity come to his own conclusion that I surrender. We see this even practically, like let's say somebody's born into the Krishna consciousness movement, and then when they're 16, then they say, you know, like, is this me or is this like my parents? Is this me or is it coming from my parents or, you know, what is it? And sometimes they have to step back. Or it doesn't even have to be somebody born in the movement. I've seen, you know, lots of people join the Krishna consciousness movement and you just get caught up. I mean, Lord Chaitanya's movement is far out and you come in and it's like, yeah! And then later on, you know, there's a lot that comes to bear and then you go like, is this me or you know, should I, you know, do something else? And it's not until someone actually makes this decision within him or herself, it has to come from you, that I absolutely want this and I'm absolutely going to surrender. And this is what's called sincerity. It's coming to terms with one's own desire. Even if you can't do it, it doesn't matter. I mean, of course, you know, it'll matter to you. But even if you can't do it, but if you've made that decision that I want this relationship with Krishna and I want pure devotional service, even though I'm hindered in so many ways, it may take millions of births, I don't care, I'm taking it, and I've ruled out everything else. Once that comes into one's mind, then Krishna feels free to exert himself, and that's the second part of the verse. Of samoham sarvabhuteshu ye bhajanti. Once one starts this budge that like I want you, Krishna, then Krishna's reciprocation is inordinate, say the acharyas. That means that Bhagavan Krishna, he's not like Paramatma tit for tat. He's called vanchatita. He fulfills your desire way more than you could have imagined or expected, and you see it again and again in the Bhagavatams. Like, wait, what? It's like, where did that come from? Came from Bhagavan. Because he totally exerts himself in the relationship. He's just waiting for us to show something. So we shouldn't be afraid that we'll be disturbing Krishna or anything like that by declaring that we're in. And even if we don't even mean it, if you say it. I mean, look at Putana. Putana was just a scam artist, and she dressed up in the wrong, you know, as a devotee. And the next thing you know, there she is in the Hare Krishna movement. One devotee did that in Hawaii, and he had no idea what Hare Krishna was, but he just thought he'd have some fun with his friends on Halloween, and he dressed up like a devotee. And then they were all going around town bar hopping, and they saw the devotees. Lo and behold, downtown chant, and his friend's like, go ahead, you're one of them. Get in there. And he goes, yahoo! And he jumped in, and just, you know, because he was kind of an over-the-top person, he kept the gag going, and he jumped in the van and went back to the temple with the devotees. He didn't mean any of it. But Krishna kind of like, well, okay. But if one can find one molecule of sincerity somewhere, where one comes to terms with one's existential position and then says, actually, I'm an eternal servant of Krishna, and I'm going to push that button. It's sitting right in front of me, and I'm going to push it. I don't care what anybody else says. I'm pushing the button that says, I surrender. And if you do that, then watch out, because then Krishna, he starts moving heaven and earth. And then Prabhupada writes in the light of the Bhagavad, he said that after that, even if you don't want it anymore, hey, it's fail-safe, you push the button. You know, he said the same thing in the Nectar of Instruction. He said you'll be forcibly dragged after that point, because Krishna wants us back more than we can imagine. And it's like, you said it, come on, just, you know, no going back. Does that help? Okay. Yes, Prabhu.
Marsh has this reflection. You were mentioning about how the modes that we subscribe to, we get more or less mercy.
So we were talking about the modes, and according to the mode we subscribe to, we get more or less mercy.
And then you mentioned about how demons, since they're in the mode of ignorance, they get lesser mercy.
And we said the demons in the mode of ignorance, they get less mercy.
So I was thinking of two verses from the Bhagavad Gita, if I may.
Please, he's thinking of two verses from the Bhagavad Gita and he's about to present them.
So it's 5:15.
5:15?
Actually 5:14 and then
5:14 and 5:15.
The embodied spirit, the master of the city of his body.
The embodied spirit, master of the city of his body.
Does not create activities.
Does not create activities.
Nor does he induce people to act.
Nor does he induce people to act.
Nor does he create the fruits of action.
Nor does he create the fruits of action.
All this is enacted by the modes of material nature.
All this is enacted by the modes of material nature.
And then now 15. Nor does the Supreme Lord assume.
Nor does the Supreme Lord assume
anyone's sinful or pious activities.
Anyone's sinful or pious activities.
Embodied beings, however.
Embodied beings, however,
are bewildered because of the ignorance.
Are bewildered because of the ignorance,
which covers their real knowledge.
Which covers their real knowledge. Yes, these are right on the money, you know, and perfectly describing the topic. How we have our own relationship somehow or other with the material nature, somehow or other, and if you take it from that. That somehow or other, which it's in our translation of Rishikshashikam, somehow or other have fallen into this ocean of material existence. Because how we've fallen in, not to open this big topic again, but how we've fallen in is really something to be realized. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it's realized from chit samadhi. You have to really be beyond the modes of material nature and the perspective of being caught in the wheel of time in order to understand that. But I find, naturally, if one has a glimpse, even a glimpse, of one's feeling of a gratitude towards Krishna, appreciation for the fact that he's the life of our life, and that he's eternally allowing me to surrender and enter into his life. That the concern and the feeling of being a victim of the material nature, and also the idea of having to nail down with one's intellect exactly how everything took place in the first place, becomes more or less irrelevant. One simply then eager just to enter more deeply within the relationship. It's not so important, the other aspect. Oh, you had a point on Kit Prabhu.
I had a question.
Yeah.
You mentioned about different people like Jarasandha, Shishupal, they were envious of Krishna, but still their mind was completely focused on...
So we talked about people like Jarasandha and Shishupal who were envious of Krishna, but their mind was completely focused...
On Krishna. And they achieved liberation. So it sounds a little unfair that there is a devotee who is practicing so intensely and he gets liberation, and on the other hand, we find demons who...
It sounds a little unfair that the demons would get this liberation, whereas there may be devotees, you were saying, who
they
are...
They achieve the liberation on the same planet of Vaikuntha.
And they get liberation in the same way.
So, can you comment on that?
Sure. Well, there's two points. One point that's made in this verse is that the demons, when they approach Krishna, it's not that they retain their impurities, but because they approach Krishna, they become purified. This comes up in the pastime Putana and Agasura. Everyone wanted to know, you know, what's with this Agasura? How is it that yogis are trying to attain a glimpse of the lotus feet of Krishna, and he put those same lotus feet in the mouth of Agasura? What happened there? And Krishna went out of his way in that pastime to prove that Agasura had become purified, because after the coward boys entered, then Krishna went in, and the coward boys had died, and the calves, and he brought them back to life with his glance, and then he killed Agasura by expanding his body and choking him up. And then Agasura's soul burst out of the top of his head and it hovered in the air until Krishna came back out again. And then the soul went into the body of Krishna. Same thing with Shishupal. Actually, everyone saw it. That's why the question came up in the first place. Yudhishthira wanted to know, because we all saw it. Shishupal... I'm not doing this in chronological order, but Shishupal, of course, when he was a baby, when he first started to talk, or to, what do you call it, when a baby, babble. When he started to babble, it was all about blaspheming Krishna. And Krishna, at one point, had given a sort of a benediction or an easement that, you know, he has to do 100 blasphemies in a row without taking a break, and then otherwise I'll just let it slide. But at the Rajasuya, Shishupal couldn't keep it together. You know, it was this big assembly, and then who was it who said Krishna should be?
Sahadev.
So Sahadev said, you know, this is, Krishna should be the main honored personality here in Shishupal. What? There's so many other great people here. Anybody but Krishna, come on, you know. And he just went on and on blaspheming, and he went over 100. So then Krishna took out his disc and he threw it at Shishupal. But in that split second, and it must have been a split second because that's fast, that disc, he noticed how beautiful Krishna was. He's like, wow, he's pretty cool. And and just in that brief second, you know, that was enough. Just the tiny, tiny little appreciation. Neha bikramanashosti pratyavayonavidhi. Swalpam up, yasudharma. A tiny bit of appreciation from Krishna. And everything's finished. That's how powerful he is, the appreciation. And same thing with is mentioned in the story of Putana. That there was some, you know, sense there that she had. Oh, this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and, you know, she appreciated him. So there's a way in which these demons, they get that before they're killed. So that's why this verse says that, it says, Avesha taragam hitva. So hitva means they're giving up. What agam? They give up their sinful nature because of contacting Krishna. Now, to your question, Putana didn't achieve what, let's say, some other Raghunuga devotee who's following Yashoda. The Raghunugas who had heard about Yashoda, they're hearing and hearing, and they, the Bhagavatam, they developed this desire to follow in the footsteps of Yashoda and do the same kind of devotional service. And then, you know, they cultivate everything in hearing about, as mentioned in the Nectar of Instruction, the ultimate advice. Rupa Goswami says, Tannam Rupa Charitari Sukirtananu Smrityo Kramena Rasanam Anasiniyo Jatishtan Vraje Tananuragi Jananugami Kalam Nayat Akilamityu Padesha Saram. The Saram of Upadesha, the cream of all advice, he said, is one should organize one's full time, 24 hours a day, in hearing about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this way, one will come to reside in Vrindavan and will become a follower of one of the residents of Vrindavan. That's the sum and substance of our process. And then, following in the footsteps by hearing and hearing and cultivating that same mood, one comes to a very special position in the spiritual world. But Putana, although she got the position of mother, it's indicated by our Acharyas that it's not exactly the same. It's not like Yashoda. So there's no mistakes. I mean, everything, the reciprocation there is inordinate, as I mentioned before, but it's not exactly the same. Everyone has their own individual circumstances and relationship with Krishna. And by the way, it's not that somebody gets cheated either, because this is one of the main points of the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, when Gopakumar's meeting devotees in different places, they're all satisfied. It's not that they're feeling that, you know, why did I get gypped? You know, somebody else. They all say, everyone, even the gopis, and this is another important point, when Narada is going to find out who got the most mercy from the Supreme, and he's interviewing different devotees. He identifies this Brahmana who's offering, you know, a feast and a festival, and then he takes all whatever punya he got, he gives it back to the deities, and Narada says, you're the best. And then, you know, this devotee defers to another, it goes all the way up to Vrindavan. And there, the gopis of Vrindavan, they're saying, it's not us, it's everybody else. So if somebody's saying, it's us, it's nobody else, they've missed the point of Raghunuga Bhakti, kind of by a wide margin. So you'll find that, however, all the devotees that are in their position, although they have that humility, they are they're fully satisfied in their relationship. Any other points? Yes. Yes, please.
Like in the starting, that every living entity has a particular capacity to absorb Lord's mercy.
Every living, in the beginning, we said every living entity has a particular capacity to absorb the Lord's mercy.
So, you know, with that, we have to be really patient and tolerant, because, as you said, that time will come, though it might take.
With that, we have to be patient and tolerant, because the time will come, but it may take a long time. Yeah. As Devahuti asked this question to Kapila Dev and said, it seems impossible to come out of the material concept of life. So life after life I've been here. And still in this life, it seems like I am my body. What am I supposed to do? And Kapila Dev said, you have to hear for a long time. And, you know, it's a step-by-step process. Also, even in the Brahma Samhita, near the end, the verses given by Krishna to Brahma, he mentions that by slow degrees, by following Shastra, by associating with devotees and practicing, one gradually comes to this position. Any other points or things on or off the topic? Yes. Prabhu?
Prabhu, in case of a putana, her intention is to own. It's not a...
In the case of her intention was to harm, but still she got the benefit. That's right. That's why it's so amazing. That's a Brahma you'll find in his prayers in 10th canto, 14th chapter. Brahma says, Krishna, do you have any mercy left after putana for the residents of Vrindavan? He says, did you give it all to Putana? Because it just seems crazy. You know, she came to murder you in a really horrendous way, and you totally benedicted her. So what do you have left? You know, everyone's amazed at that. Even that's mentioned in the third canto of Bhagavatam too. Uddhava says, Aho vakiyam stanakala kutam chikhamsaya payat apyasadvi. He said, she was asadvi. She was completely inauspicious. And she, and he says, oh, Baki. Baki was, he's sister of Putana, of Bakasura. And so he says at the end, who would take shelter of anybody else? After you hear this, and you see that Krishna gave shelter to Putana, why would you go anywhere else besides taking shelter of Krishna? You'd be insane. That's the conclusion all the devotees around this pastime of Putana. So it's really so glorious. Any other things? Yes, Prabhu. Holy name, yeah. Yeah, that Rupa Goswami says that, he says so many things in that Namashtakam that, Ya Brahma Sakshat Nishchiyapi. But that's not the verse I was thinking of. Yes, Vacham Vacham Itya Deity Bhavato. He says that the name and the named are the same, but then he says they're different. Because he says, although it's well known that the Krishna and his name are the same because they're absolute, he said, but I say they're different. Because the name is more merciful than Krishna. Because he says, if you offend Krishna, and therefore you're separated because of your offense, the holy name will still come to you and offer you a chance to come back. And he said, and as soon as you start chanting sincerely again, then you'll be plunged in the ocean of bliss, and you'll be rectified by the holy name. Not only that, the holy name is chases people everywhere. Last week I was in New York, and right after Bhagavatam class, which is that I think one of the main attractive features is in New York. Wherever you are, you can just bust out the door and do Sankirtan. You don't have to wait or go anywhere. Just like it's a Sankirtan city anywhere. So after Bhagavatam class, we just go right out the door and do Harinam and book distribution around the block. And you go, even some of the stores, you know, we look in the store, people are in there all bored, and it's like, you want us to come in, you know, and they go, yeah, and we just open the door and go inside and have the Harinam inside their shop. And but I was just noticing how, you know, people, they're trying really hard as they possibly can to stay absorbed in the material energy and make something of it. And it's a real grind. It's really hard. But the holy names, they're like, come on, you know, it just bounces off everybody and wakes them up and gives them an opportunity to come back to the spiritual world. So inviting, so important. So thank you very much. I know everyone's busy. You got places to go, people to meet. And you came all the way over here to the Shadowhawk Drive. This little hideout here where we hear about all the such things, this is the Bhagavatam. And it's an exciting weekend too, because there's so many devotees coming in from all over for this Sadhu Sangha. It's amazing, isn't it? So thank you. Thank you so much. Go Premanande, Nitai Gaura Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Nitai Gaura Hari Bol, Nitai Gaura Hari Bol, Hari Bol.
Hari Bo Nitai Gora Hari Bo
Vanchika Padrivishcha Kripasnabe Vacha Patitanam Pavanibyo Vaishnavibyo Namo Namaha Ananda Kodi Vaishnaviniki Jai
Natchari Armarman Hey Natchari Armarman Natchari Armarman Natchari Armarman.